Y'all Elite Podcast. Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Sean Spears? Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
1, 2, 3, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Aftershock. I'm your host once again, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter. And what a better way to kick off the new year, the new decade, than with a bang on Dynamite. And now that that pun is behind us and left in the dust, I want to do things a bit differently this week. Being it is 2020, I figured rather than going segment by segment through the card and kind of giving you the full rundown of the show, I would more just address some major points of focus, what AEW achieved building towards a new year here, and what things stuck out to me as some of the better moments of the night, and what kind of made this show a really great way to kick off the year, and I think a very successful way to kick off the year. But we'll just kind of break through some different ideas of what they're going to try to do in 2020, who we might see in 2020 in the title pictures, and kind of a overview of what happened in the highlights of the night on January 1st, New Year's Day. And speaking of which, I just want to first off say, everybody who's listening to this, I hope you had a great holiday season, a great start to your 2020. And I do also want to just quickly shout out, I do have a 20 for 2020 series over on ProWrestlingPost.com. It's a four-part series breaking down the best matches in AEW for 2019. Two separate lists, one for the best tag matches, a top 10 there, and a top 10 for the best singles matches as well. So please definitely check that out over on ProWrestlingPost.com. I'll always have links on my Twitter account at Spots High, where you can find all the things that I'm up to, all my opinions being blasted off as shows go on and things like that. But definitely give the 20 for 20 AEW series a look for me. I've dedicated a lot of hours of looking through the footage from 2019, and of course having watched it along the ride as it happened also gave me a good perspective. So I tried my best to really make it foolproof and go through and get as many matches in there as possible. May have been a little bit OCD in how far I went with putting this list together. So just give it a like, give it a view, give it a share, whatever you feel like doing. But definitely check that out, along with a lot more to come for the new year for ProWrestlingPost.com, as well as where I write my other articles for as well. So always keep an eye out on Twitter to see if I'm announcing anything new that might be coming that way. But enough about me. Let's dive into the product that we all have come to love. At least probably if you're listening to this, you've come to love, or you're just on here to see how crappy things are going, which is not the case. So anyway, we'll just go ahead and dive right into it. And I want to jump off with what they actually started the night with here, which was the video package highlighting the Elite and the journey of their year in 2019. And just how they've come to be this promotion on TNT television, you know, one of the only promotion to do so since, of course, WCW shuttered its doors back in March of 2001. So it's very much a big story as to how they got here. And of course, if you don't know it by now, there is actually a great summary of that over on Pro Wrestling Post by Robbie, so check that out as well. But it just detailed everything that got them to where they are, and ended up posing the question at the end that is the Elite still Elite, basically because they've gotten a lot of criticism for not winning, which is kind of strange, because when they first started out, everybody was saying that because they had power in the company, that they were just going to book themselves to the top, have all the belts, and it was just going to be the Elite with a bunch of titles, kind of self-serving their egos, as a lot of fans would put it, not myself. But it just seemed that the general consensus was they were going to come into this company and just use it as a platform to fantasy book themselves to the top. And that has not been the case. And thusly, of course, wrestling fans have criticized it in the exact opposite measure of what they expected. They want more wins to come out of the Elite for the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Cody, and to see them kind of be more a part of the winning picture. And I think this night very much delivered on those expectations and really presented them as the highest caliber of talent in AEW right now. You know, it just was a very smart way to address those concerns, and that was a theme throughout the night here, with addressing concerns that people have had about the product and really kind of putting fresh eyes to it. So that's something I wanted to talk about as well. We saw throughout the night some different interview angles backstage, which people have been really asking for a lot more of, some more focus on the women's division as well, as we saw a great Fatal 4-Way match here tonight, and then also having the segment backstage with Riho being addressed by Britt Baker. Just very well done conceptually in the mindset of addressing what fans have been concerned about. And you even saw when Chris Jericho was delivering his promo, his kind of already videoed promo, probably as he was on his way to Wrestle Kingdom in Japan. You could see that he was just, you know, making sure to address the fact that fans know that there's kind of a lot of factions going on right now. It's a all-out recruiting war sort of thing going on. So just kind of looking the fans in the eyes and saying, we know what's going on, and incorporating that into the story as well in a way that doesn't really break kayfabe. I think it's just very, very smart, and you can tell that they're very much paying attention to their fan base, which is something you can only really love as a wrestling fan, because that's something that the big guy over there has been criticized for a very long time. You know, we had the Authority coming out and saying that it was going to be the fans who take control of Raw now, and it just never really came to fruition. So we'll see how the AEW landscape changes things and how they look to address things, because it seems very much like this was a fan servicing episode, and not in a bad way. They addressed it in ways that weren't just, here, we know what's going on, we're gonna cater to you. It was all put into the context of good storytelling, not just forced around to make it a part of it. So it was very smart and entertaining stuff throughout the night when it comes to addressing that. And I really loved the opening video package addressing the is the Elite still Elite, because I think that's a very important question that a lot of people have had on their minds for much of 2019, seeing Kenny Omega lose and not be featured, and some people saying that he's proved that he was overrated, which is just nonsense to me. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, this was essentially AEW's answer to the naysayers of 2019 to kick off 2020, which is a brilliant mindset to have going into a new year, and trying to grow and better the company is exactly what they need to be focused on, more than the competition, more than NXT, more than Raw, more than SmackDown, more than anything going on with WWE, anything going on with any of the independents. They really need to just be focused on making their product the best possible and capturing as many fans to it as they can each week, which is just, you know, simple business. But that's exactly what they've done here, and I think it was a great way to kick off 2020. And speaking of which, the Darby Allin versus Cody match was excellent. Some great different storytelling elements in that, in putting over Cody eventually with the victory. But, you know, it just, without spending too much time talking about the match, it was just a lot of back and forth and a lot of making Allin look good and exposed turnbuckle, you know, being used. So teasing at some possible heelishness, and also Cody having Arn Anderson now as a manager, and him kind of using this head coach role as they've assigned him, very smartly, even at one point covering up his mouth with paper, you know, very much like the NFL, and just a lot of very smart uses of the talent that they had in this match, and making Allin once again look strong against Cody, you know, not selling selling him short, even though he did end up taking the loss, and just having Cody, you know, overcome this, his arm being worked over, and having that be part of the storytelling within the match, and just a lot of smart, simple things going on here with Arn Anderson in Cody's corner now, and having the name value of that. I thought this was all around just a brilliant opener, and once again, putting over the Elite in a victory, which was very smart. And so what I want to do now is just skip right to the main event, where we also saw the Elite, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks taking on Pac and the Lucha Bros. And this match also ended up seeing the Elite take the victory. And this matchup was a defining point for what AEW's product is and will be in 2020. This was a very back-and-forth, action-packed trios match. And I think that that's something we might even see a belt for in the near future, a six-man tag title being introduced, because we've seen several times the Elite being tagged up as this three pairing with Kenny Omega. So it's definitely something that is part of what they've done so far, and I think it's very much taking the image of Lucha Libre and having that six-man tag be a dedicated division at some point is something that I think would draw a lot of international eyes and bring some familiarity to the fans that are coming from that type of product. And I think it matches up very well, and I think that's why we've seen a lot of crossover with AAA and things like that. So I thought that this main event had a little bit of everything. If you're a fan of what AEW delivers, you know, all sorts of high-flying antics from the Lucha Brothers, of course, and then Pac hitting a Black Arrow at one point that was just picture perfect. The man just doesn't look like he has any business on the ground. It just looks like he's on moon gravity from Tony Hawk Pro Skater, if any of you gamers out there remember that, putting in the cheat codes back on the PlayStation 2. But I digress here. It's very much like playing a video game, though, seeing these guys compete and just seeing the outlandish maneuvers that they're pulling off. It's kind of like seeing a real life rendering of a lot of Here Comes the Pain games back in the day, of just high flying, high octane sort of action, you know, just great stuff. And I really thought that it was a good idea to have the Elite kind of stand strong at the end of the night, and then having Hangman Page refuse to be a part of that, also having this segment earlier in the night with Private Party where he was taking all the drinks and had the little blurb above his name once again, which I think is a brilliant running joke that said has been drinking this time this week. So just a really great way of furthering that storyline of Hangman Page being this lone wolf, and there's so many different directions they could go with this. Recently, I had an idea pop into my head once again where I saw that James Storm was talking about a possible Beer Money reunion in NXT, and I thought, wouldn't it be kind of brilliant to take that concept and use it with Adam Page and maybe have James Storm come and be a part of AEW instead? But obviously, if he's got intentions of thinking about NXT, that's not going to come to fruition. But having something similar with a very in-your-face cowboy attitude, I think would be a brilliant move for Hangman's career in the future, and maybe turning him this sort of badass heel for a little while, and having him tear through things solo even would be a great way to utilize him and kind of further his character along from just being attached to the Elite, which is something, once again, they've taken the advice kind of from the fans, where people have said that he hasn't had his own kind of solo aspirations beyond being a part of this bigger group that's attached to management. So having him branch off and kind of distance himself from them has been a very brilliant move in my book, because I think that it's really allowed a lot of character development for Adam Page and allowed him to really show off exactly who he is beyond just being a part of that group that brought him into this company. So I think going forward, you'll see that be a focal point, and really delivering on that in a way that's satisfactory to the fans is going to be a very important building block for 2020. And I think with the kind of failed ending of 2019 with Dark Order and how flat that fell, I think that the important side of things is really focusing on getting those big moment payoffs right. And earlier in the night, that's something that I think they did fumble a little on, if I did have to nitpick at something. something, which was the Jon Moxley and Trent matchup, which for me, it just wasn't a hugely entertaining match. You know, it was a decent little TV match, but kind of just a little bit of filler content in a way. You kind of knew Moxley was going to come out on top, so it was kind of just waiting for the ending to happen in a lot of ways, because you know that he's dominant at the moment. And so I didn't think there was anything particularly wrong with the match, just wasn't that wildly entertaining as a lot of other matches from Moxley tend to be. But this was just a little bit straightforward, kind of getting to the story of him having to address Jericho. And I thought that was a little underwhelming. I think that I like the idea of him, you know, presenting the idea of owning part of the Inner Circle and having that be an LLC. And I thought that was a smart idea, the whole offer you can't refuse thing of saying, here, you can have this beautiful 4GT with the Mox license plate on the bottom, and saying that, you know, it's basically like a boys club of joining something that's going to really take care of him and he's going to be a big part of. So I think that was all smart. The problem I had was when they had Moxley stand in the ring and say, okay, yeah, he was a great mentor to me, Jericho, and starting to address it and just saying, I'm going to have my answer next week, which it just, I don't like that baiting and trying to get people to tune in next week by just being very unsatisfactory with progressing a storyline. Cliffhangers can be good if done right, but when overused, it's the law of diminishing returns. You know, you just end up having so many cliffhangers and so many broken promises that it ends up very much like the Daniel Bryan debacle that we had for a little while, where he was going to announce things and he just dropped the microphone and walked away, and oh, the big announcement's coming this week, and it never happened. And it just, none of that did anything good for his character. Obviously, he's recovered greatly now since then, but that little bit of lull period was just such a scratch your head kind of thing. And I feel like that was very similar to this, where it's like, you know, he's standing in the ring, he just told you his offer, you know, you would think there would be some sort of continuation on Moxley's side, and instead it's just tune in next week to find out what happens with the Inner Circle and Moxley exploits, which isn't always a bad thing, but the way it was handled here just fell a little flat for me. So I think that they need to really, once again, have this be a focal point of their storytelling for 2020 and really get this Moxley versus Jericho feud right. Because if they are going to go that direction and have him reject it, they really need to do it in a way that feels refreshing and new now, because he had this weird little, no, I'm not going to tell you yet, but I respect you kind of promo that he cut here. So we'll see how that progresses. But, you know, once again, a huge storyline to follow up on, you know, the Moxley versus Jericho situation. So that alongside the Hangman Page are two of the biggest storylines of the new year coming up. And I think that you'll see a lot more kind of developing off of that in the future as being something they build their program around. But definitely a series of storylines to follow for sure. But speaking of that same context, we had MJF addressing Cody and kind of explaining his stipulations, which basically amounted to Wardlow being against him in a steel cage match, him having to take 10 lashings from MJF's belt, and that also he could not lay a finger on MJF until the match happened, otherwise he will never wrestle him ever inside an AEW ring. So I think all of this was handled very well by an expert microphone master. I mean, he just really knows how to get comfortable, get behind the crowd, and push them to the reactions that he wants to get. And he has that look of the heel with the scarf, and you know, shout out to MJF scarf on Twitter, by the way. But you know, always having the scarf around his neck, and just always looking that stereotypical rich, snobby, douchey kind of guy. And I think that he plays that heel role so perfectly and is very much like a young Jericho in a lot of the ways that he delivers his promos and the conviction that he has in his words and the way that he's so comfortable with a crowd as if he's just part of them and just sitting back reacting to his own brilliance before it even happens, you know, just kind of knowing exactly where it's going to land. And just this whole situation with Cody versus MJF has been handled expertly, and I think it's kind of the model that the other two storylines I just mentioned need to kind of follow along, in the sense that they've built it exactly the pace that it needs to be. It's building hype, even though it's not being addressed every week exactly where it's going. It's done in a way that teases you along and makes you feel like you're a part of this bigger story that's going to be told when they do finally make it into the ring. So having Wardlow take on Cody in a steel cage for his first match, awesome way to introduce a monster big man. I'm sure you're going to see Cody get the living hell beaten out of him, you know, inside of that cage. And it's just going to really be a great stepping stone for that MJF versus Cody match that is being further built down the line. And it just kind of breadcrumbs along and leads you to this bigger kind of main event finale situation. And I think that's been handled expertly. This promo did a great job of building that even further. The one that he had before it, where he was insulting Cody, and the ones that Cody has had going at MJF, it's just always leading towards something. And along the way, it's done brilliantly as well. The execution is on point, which is a major part of making sure that it continues along at the pace and at the kind of height that it needs to be successful and to continue being a major focusing point for the fans and something that they're going to anticipate and want to pay big money to see when it does kind of come to fruition and have that final moment. So I think great stuff all around here. And on the other side of things, we also had the other Rhodes brother having some story development with Jake Hager and having him get involved in the Guevara versus Dustin matchup. I thought was an excellent choice as well, kind of leading to a potential matchup between Hager and Dustin at some point. Of course, we've also got Hager versus Luchasaurus in the chamber, so some great matches that will be probably done at some point, either on Dynamite or on Revolution in February on the day of the leap year. So we'll see exactly where they go with that and at what time they choose to pull the trigger on that. But once again, it's just leading you to all these different matchups that have the potential of happening and getting you excited for them and having something be the backstory. Because I think what a lot of the modern product, especially over in WWE, has fallen into is we have a big event at the end of the month, or, you know, the middle of the month, whatever it is, but there's always basically a 28-day build period where there's a new feud introduced on the first week, and by the third week, it's supposed to be at its boiling point, and by the fourth week, we're having the payoff to the storyline, and then everybody moves on right after that. There's no real long-term storytelling, you know, beyond Lashley and Lana and things like that. You know, it just never seems to really focus on one feud and let it build over the course of months. And I think that's something AEW has started to capture and focus on and do a lot better, where they're really letting long-term storytelling be the focus as opposed to the outlier. And I think that's just something that, as a wrestling fan, I've craved for quite a long time, you know, more depth and more, you know, context as to why these fights are happening and making them feel like a bigger deal. And I think AEW has captured that very well, and I think that that's a real focal point of what they're going to do in 2020. And having that lasting image of the Elite standing tall in the ring and Hangman Page refusing to be a part of it because, as his own words were saying, he didn't do anything, which is what a lot of people criticized. And it's just all building to long-term moments and having these teases of where, you know, Omega and Page might have some conflict, and Guevara has conflict with different members for being involved with the Inner Inner Circle, and just a lot of different matchups that are being built up along the way. We had Kip Sabian be introduced finally on television tonight when he low-blowed Joey Janela backstage, or rather Penelope Ford low-blowed Janela backstage. So great stuff there because of the real-life connection that they've had, obviously, with Penelope Ford and Joey Janela having some history. So it's just all done in a way that is building towards something and has future in mind, as opposed to kind of letting the cards fall where they may a lot of times, like it ends up being in WWE, where it's waiting for the big pop to happen, or, you know, one guy to really have the fans latch on to him, and then, oh, we'll build him a program and now we'll focus on him. It's just kind of always waiting for something to happen that tells you what to do, whereas AEW is doing the opposite of that. They're already building long term and they're addressing the fans' concerns along the way, but they're not morphing their product around it. They're just simply adding it into what they're already doing in a way that addresses the fans' concerns, but is not making that their priority either. They're just still focused on their long-term story building, and I think that's all the smart moves, and they're playing their chess pieces so well. And I think that 2020 is going to be a major year, and I think those storylines that I've talked about are the real kind of focal concerns and building blocks that AEW is going to have and needs to focus on. The whole build up with MJF versus Cody, Moxley and Jericho, and the Inner Circle situation, Hangman Page versus the Elite, or versus Omega, or whatever that comes to be. We also have some outlying rematches like Pac versus Omega and things like that. So a lot of different storylines that are being built, but I think the main pillars are that John Moxley versus Jericho program, the MJF versus Cody program, and then also the Hangman Page situation. I think those are the three pillars that are kind of going to be what 2020 is built around and are going to need to really hit home to really capitalize on what they've built and really make the hype worth it. And I think they have all the right tools to get there, but I think that they just need to focus on sticking the course with their storytelling and not just, you know, taking every piece of advice that comes along the way and throwing that in to make it part of what's happening. I think that they're doing exactly what they need to, like having Jericho addressing the overpopulation of factions and smart little things like that, I think are all the right moves and are kind of the sticking point as to what they should stick to. So we'll see what 2020 looks like, but I'm very much excited, and I think that highlight of this night for me would probably be the MJF promo. I was just thoroughly entertained throughout. If I had to pick a match, it would definitely be the main event, the Lucha Bros and Pac versus the Elite. That was an excellent matchup. Just nonstop, quick-paced brilliance from some of the best in the world at what they do, and just a showcase of talent for what AEW has in their back pocket, with the Lucha Bros and Pac being really some of the most entertaining wrestlers to watch, in my opinion anyway. So I really loved what they did. I really love what they accomplished, and I think 2020 is going to be a great and grand year, and I'm very excited to bring all of that to you here on AEW Aftershock. You know, once again, like I said, I'm always bringing new articles. Got my 20 for 2020 AEW series going right now on the second part right now on ProWrestlingPost.com with all the honorable mentions for the 20 best matches in AEW of 2019. So make sure you give that a watch. I'll also be having tons more stuff going on ProWrestlingPost.com. Last word on ProWrestling.com as well. Also some articles over on What Culture. Always bringing new things to you guys here on AEW Aftershock with the WWE podcast here. So always make sure to follow me at SpotsHigh on Twitter. But for now, for the first inaugural episode of 2020, goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night. Goodbye and good night.